Good afternoon. Welcome to Who's Tom and Dick? With your hosts, Martin Weavers and Patrick Mortimer.
Hey.
Howdy, howdy,
how
howdy.
How you doing, everybody? It's an exciting day today.
It is exciting today. I'm really nervous, I am.
I'm not. I'm all right.
No, you're all right.
But I hope everybody remembers that we actually said we was going to do a different kind of show from time to time. Well, today, you ain't going to get it much different than today, are you, Pat?
No, definitely not. We are so excited because we have actually got our very first celebrity on the show.
That's what I wanted. On 29th of December, I wanted that.
Yeah.
So you're going to introduce him? Go on then, Pat.
Okay, we're going to welcome the one and only Joe Pasquale.
Hello, yeah. Lex. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks, Joe.
Good. Thanks for coming down as
I'm
well.
I'm in your kitchen.
Yeah. You are.
Yeah. It's great, isn't it?
And, yeah.
And I'm going to move from it as well.
Where are you going to go then? Where are you going to move to?
I'm moving further up the road. I'm going to move to a little place in Suffolk, aren't I?
Yep. Whereabouts in Suffolk? Do you want to say
what's it called? Can you remember?
Dis?
No, with the teapots.
Oh, I don't know. I ain't got a clue.
Oh, I always forget. I have to think of Werther's Originals. It's called Wortham.
Oh, okay. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, runner up on New Faces, 1987.
Yep.
I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, winner.
Yeah.
Celebrity Masked Singer. Winner.
Yeah.
Recently, The Weakest Link. Winner.
Yeah.
You don't settle for runners-up anymore,
No, I don't. Not anymore, I don't. Also, you know, I think you missed out Pointless. Winner three times on Pointless three times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. I love it. We've applied for Pointless.
Have you? I love doing Pointless. It's a great show to do. If you do Pointless, right, there's a trick to it. There is a trick to it, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody gets a bit cocky on it. It's particularly, so if you know an answer, don't go for a dodgy one. Don't go, I'm not sure about that one, because everybody thinks if I go for a dodgy one, then, you know, if I get it, then I'm going to go through, right? 9 times out of 10, the dodgy one's always wrong, right?
Yeah.
Always go for a definite answer you 100% know and you get through at the final.
Ah,
no.
Right.
Always go for a definite 100% that you know.
Yeah.
Don't go for one that I'm 85% sure of, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody else would go for those, and 9 times out of 10, they get it wrong. So always go for 100% that you
know.
And
this speaks a man three times.
Winner.
Yeah. Winner.
What did you win on that? £500?
No, you win it for the charity. You win whatever.
I think
we won about two and a half grand. At this one,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, what is your charity?
I've got loads of different charities for different ones. I'm a patron of about 30 different charities. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I spread it out depending on which one I do.
Yeah.
I'd first touch on this one, the real Monty.
Yeah.
It's done to raise awareness for cancer.
Yeah.
Which is obviously topical for us.
Yeah.
Stand up to cancer. Joe, you took part in this show.
Yeah.
Taking some real balls, I think, to take part. How did you feel? Were you nervous? How did you prepare yourself for it?
Yeah, well, I prepared myself because I go to the gym regularly anyway. Not that I'm super fit, but I like to be fit, but I don't look that fit. I don't look like a small version of The Rock, but I like to keep fit. So for that, I knew that I was going to get completely naked. And it was good, nowadays, 50 years ago, you did something on telly, most of it's white, nobody keeps that sort of gear. Now, everything is kept forever.
Right, yeah.
On the internet, wherever it's stored in some cloud that we all know is called the cloud, but we don't really understand how it works, but we know it's up there.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a physical cloud. I don't really understand how technology works on it, but we all know how to use it, but none of us really know how it works.
No.
So I thought, if this is going to be me forever, naked somewhere, kept in the ether of the cloud, so anyone could get this down and see me naked again. So I thought, I want to look as good as I can. So I was boxing at the time anyways, but I really put myself through it to get myself looking as best as I could at my age.
Yeah.
And because my dad had prostate cancer at the time. Sadly, he's gone now, but at the time that was one of the reasons. Because they only use people that have got some sort of affiliation with cancer at the time. They don't just get random people. You know, other people have got it or they've got people in their family with it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Testicular cancer or bladder cancer, all that sort of stuff is going on. So, and if you're going up against people like Ashley Banjo, who's completely, he's like Adonis, he's a Greek god,
Yeah.
Oh my God, if I'm up against him with nothing on, I'm not too bad about some of the other lads who are, like Willie Thorne at the time.
No.
Sadly, once again, Willie's not with us anymore.
No.
But, then your ego starts kicking, you're like, oh God, what am I going to look like that? But what's great about it, you have to get rid of all your inhibitions completely. You have to throw it out the window because, you're all in it for a reason as well. You're not just doing it for the sake of ego.
Yeah.
There was a point to it.
Yeah.
And what was really weird at the end, they also had about 20 guys on it that were the general public that were suffering from testicular or some sort of cancer in their area. and they all came out naked as well. Yeah, it wasn't just a normal, you know, people. I hate the word celebrities because I don't see myself as a celebrity. I'm just a comic. I like working, I like gigging. But they like to label you as a celebrity, but I hate that word personally, but that's beside the point. So there's us lot, and all these lads have got some sort of cancer as well. And there was about 25 of us on stage, all completely naked. And at the end of it, it's such a rush when it's finished.
Yeah.
When it's over, and there are these blinders, what they call blinders, with great big blinding light, that's what they call them, blinders. And so the audience don't actually see all your bits, right? Yeah. But the people in the... But, of course, these blinders go off, right? So on telly, they can edit it to the point where no one is going to see you, Willie, right? Yeah. But, you know, got 1,000 people in the audience. Once those blinders go off, you're naked in front of 1,000 people then. So the blinders go off, and, yeah, that's it. You're just there. And he goes, nothing you can do. You either stand there and front it out, or you run off.
Right. Mm.
So, and it's quite... You quite feel quite an elation afterwards. So everybody... And there was me and Xander, right, Armstrong, Alexander Armstrong. We were like, yeah! So we went over and cuddled each other. And as you cuddle each other, you realise you're naked. And then you go, oh, my bits are getting a bit closer to his bits, right? So you actually stick your bum out a little bit, so you're cuddling, but you've got that gap in between, right? So, we don't want that to touch. So then, of course, everybody saw that, right?
Yeah.
And then they all start. It was like a scrum, right? And I'm in the middle of it all. And I'm surrounded by 25 naked blokes. It was like the film Caligula, right? It was horrendous. And all I felt was all these willies banging on my face, going, oh, no! No, it was terrible.
Brilliant.
But as an experience, it was great. Not that was a great experience, but the whole thing itself was brilliant. I loved it.
Oh, brilliant. Okay.
So people meet you in the street and all that, obviously, because I've heard you go around our local
Tesco's. Yeah, I'm always in the Tesco's. I like a bit of Tesco's.
That's without giving it away where you live.
I live in Tesco's.
Yeah. But what do they... Victor Meldrew, everybody goes up to him and they say, I don't believe it. Yeah. They think they've never said it. So what
yeah,
do they
most
say
people
to you?
Start singing, I know something.
They said that.
Yeah. But it's all right. It's part of the job, you know. But for me, it's what people don't realise. It's just a job.
Yeah.
It's literally a job. And people go, oh, you only work an hour a night or whatever it is you do. And they don't see the other 12 hours.
Well, we had that, didn't we?
You're in the car.
Yeah.
You have to get from A to B to get to somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's what I always class myself as a driver. I do 40,000 miles a year in the car.
Crikey. Yeah.
So my primary job is a driver. The other stuff, the shows, I do for nothing because I love gigging. I love to try and make people laugh. I like the shows. I enjoy performing. But I hate being in a car. And that's where my wages come from, I always say.
Yeah.
To get paid for that.
So who brings all your stuff to the show then?
Oh, no, I just put it in my car myself. Just me and my mate. Another comic called Lee Carroll. We go about the... if you're doing telly, that's a different kettle of fish or panto. Then you stay in the same place for six weeks or whatever.
But
if I'm gigging, it's just me and my mate Lee, and we drive together. Because it's a lonely, I've done it where I've just done it on my own. Literally done a whole theatre show where you do 2 hours on your own.
Yeah.
But it's so boring because the show itself isn't boring, but the lifestyle, you get up in the morning, people don't see this, you get up in the morning, you stay at the Travel Lodge normally or Premier Inn, that sort of stuff, you don't do anywhere decent, like posh, because you're wasting your money. If you're paying a lot, no Premier Inns and Travel Lodges are expensive now anyway.
Mm, yeah.
But you don't go to a really high-end hotel because you don't use it. You might get there at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. You go in, you go to bed, you get up in the morning, have breakfast, get in the car, see how long the drive is. You've got 4 hours today. If you've got a four-hour drive, you have to give yourself at least 6 because of traffic.
Yeah.
And on that road, you have to find something decent to eat. Then you get to the theatre about 3 o'clock to put the gear in, set it up. You have an hour's break, but it's between 6 and 7. The show starts at 7:30. And the whole thing goes on for 3 months, basically.
Right.
And people don't see that. They go, oh, so you're only doing an hour show tonight. Well, yeah. No, that's it. Whereas the rest of it, it's a lifestyle of living out of a suitcase doing one-nighters, which is hard work, the boredom of that, which is why I take another mate of mine with us, and he's another comic, and it's great that you just spend time with each other then.
I must admit, I thought someone went ahead and done that for you, didn't
No.
you? Because you have a lot of props.
Yeah, I do have a lot of props. As I've got older, the props have gone less and less and less and less, and I do more and more stories, which is great, the setup time is normally a few hours to set
up. We used to use a lot of props, didn't we? We used to do a puppet theatre sketch.
Oh, did you?
And we made it. Especially to get in his car. What was that car at the time? But anyway, especially made just to get with his boot up, just to get in. And we hid behind with the old puppet. and puppets and all that. But,
yeah, but you do find it's an aggro to get all that stuff in.
I know.
Found, and it doesn't benefit the show a lot more than people want to see. Either they want to see you or they don't want to see you.
Yeah.
And so I found it's a lot easier for me just to tell a lot more stories and use the audience more.
Yeah.
You know, I still like using. I still love using a lot of props, but a lot smaller than they used to be now.
Yeah.
I brought my boys up to the Britannia Theatre to see you once, and
how long ago was that?
Several years ago.
Oh yeah, I was up there again this year.
Yeah.
Oh, last year there. Yeah.
And you kindly give them an autograph at the end, and I think they're about eight. They're in their 30s now.
Oh yes, yeah, I've been going a long time. And
the thing they asked me is, said, "Does he still sing Fillings?"
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I do. Yeah. Sometimes I change it every year. You see, because I'm going that long. So otherwise, you would get bored doing the same gear all the time.
Yeah.
So I try and change it up a lot.
I haven't heard that one, but we saw you at the Britannia Pier, and we got married.
Not me and you. Remember that. Who got married? You got married.
My wife.
Yeah.
And we was at Yarmouth.
Yeah.
And you signed her ribbon, and I slipped the thing back for someone to mention backstage.
How long ago was that?
10 years ago now.
Blimey.
And you said, I remember you saying to this day, "What the bloody hell are you doing watching me when you got married?"
That was your honeymoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Like, yeah, we're 2 days here because I really treated her well, taking to Yarmouth for a honeymoon.
Oh, that's funny, isn't it? Yeah,
but no, great Yarmouth. We went to Tunisia afterwards.
Yeah. So but I love Great Yarmouth. I lived in Lowestoft for about 10 years.
Mm.
A place called Hopton on Sea, which is great.
Oh,
I love it up there. Yeah.
Used to play the camp there.
Yeah, Potters.
Yeah.
Yeah, Potters.
And the other
Warner's
one.
There's Warner's. There's loads of them up there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I did all those gigs years
did
and years
ago. Did you ever appear in a nightclub called Cinderella's?
Where was that?
That was Belton away, I think.
Oh, possibly. I've been doing it for nearly 40 years now, Pat, so I probably have. But
right. Yeah, because
it wasn't one we did, was it?
No, I did a hypnosis show there, and I'm sure Joe was on the next week.
Don't look into his eyes,
Joe. Oh, really?
Joe.
Oh, you must have known I was definitely on. You knew I was on there. I probably was on then.
Yeah. I'm sure you were on the next week.
Yeah. Probably was on, Pat.
It's going back. But when my boys saw you up at Yarmouth, who should be invited up on stage? Dad.
Oh, was he? I get you up?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Do you recognise me?
Oh, yeah, of course I do, Pat. What did we do?
I can't remember what we did now, but it was something weird and wonderful.
Oh, yeah, it would have been weird. Yeah, it definitely would have been weird.
But I've got fond memories of that, so... Yeah, as soon as I said to you coming on the show, asked him if he still does the Feelings
one. That's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
I still remember
I saw you in Southend a couple of years ago doing the Some Mothers Do Heaven.
Oh, yeah, Frank Spencer.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
I was going to ask a question about that, actually. The guy who wrote it, Raymond Allen.
Raymond, the original,
He used to come, he really did actually come and watch you, did he?
All the time, yeah. Sadly, Ray died last year.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, he was the most wonderful man you could ever meet. He was like meeting Frank Spencer in his 80s, because it was based on all of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when he started writing the first series. He wrote for loads and loads of comics, like Frank Howard and Dave Allen, all that sort of that era comic. And he wrote loads of sitcoms, and none of them got picked up except for this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on his life. And sadly, because he's gone, as I said, but he was the loveliest man you could ever meet. And he would sit at the front row, and he'd sit there crying. He'd love it.
That's pressure.
Yeah, it was the first time, but the thing is, because it was an original script that we put together, we used a couple of key plot lines from the original series.
Yeah.
But we said from day one, I was doing Spamalot in town in West End, and the director, I'm a bit of a do-it-yourself person, but I'm complete rubbish at it, there was a fan in the dressing room. We were at the Playhouse Theatre, which is behind Charing Cross Station, and it's underground. The dressing room's all underground, so there's rats everywhere. A lot of people think West End theatres, it must be a glitzy backstage. Not rats everywhere, right?
Right.
And there's no windows, and I've got to say it was underground, and you hear the trains going from your parking in at Charing Cross, and it was rumbling, it was rattling, everything. It was amazing to be there. It was a great atmosphere, but it wasn't what everybody imagined it would be in the West End. And I was trying to rewire this fan. It was a hot August day, and I had the costume. I was King Arthur, so I had all these three layers of chainmail and God knows what else in. And I rewired the fan, I plugged it, and it blew up. And the director, Guy Unsworth, was in the room at the time, and he went, "You're just like Frank Spencer." And as he said that, a little light bulb came on in both of our heads, and we went... Oh, is it? And we both got together. We wrote the script between us. We contacted Ray first of all.
Oh, he was part of the writing team?
Yeah, yeah, we both wrote it together.
That's why you remember about 138 pages of 139 or something.
That's exactly it, yeah. Well, we contacted Ray because Ray was the still owned the rights to the scripts and the title of it as well, more importantly, regardless of the scripts. And he said, we've had loads of people ask if we can do it and put it on stage. Well, we said no. And we said, Guy spoke to him originally. He said, why is that? He said, they never went, and it wasn't the right person to do it. He said, it all depends on who you want to play Frank. And he said, it was me. And he went, oh my God. So I said, what? He said, I've been buying tickets to see Joe whenever he comes in the Isle of Wight for the past 20 years. And he used to sit in the front row watching me.
Right.
So I was like, oh my God. So he said, can we have a meeting? So we got on the ferry, went straight to the Isle of Wight. And he said, yes, the rights are yours for as long as you want for perpetuity. It's yours. So he signed the contract. And he just loved it. So, and he said, I like, because when we first did it, we thought, we tried to do it as the TV version of it. And we both went, all three of us, me, Guy and Ray, said, that's not going to work. You can't get an audience to believe that character trying to do an impression of Michael Crawford for 2 hours. The only way this is going to work is if I do it as me, as you saw the show. That
Make it your own.
You saw it as me. I didn't do Michael Crawford's version of Frank. And that was the scary thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fine with Ray. I wasn't too nervous about Ray because Ray was in at the inception of it all. So it was fine, the conception of it all. Inception. And the inception of it, and the conception. He was there all the way through it anyway. And so, but what was really hard, the very first time we put it on its feet in front of an audience, and are they going to accept that character as someone else doing it? Because it was so dyed in the wool with Michael doing it. And it was great. It was brilliant. As you saw, the audience loved it. And we did it for 5 years on and off during the COVID period as well.
Yeah.
Wow. And it was the best thing, that one of the best, most joyful things I'd ever done. As you said, the script was 139 pages.
Yeah.
And it was a hell of a learning.
And wasn't it voted the best transformation from the TV programme?
To stage, it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had to wait 2 years to see it because we bought our tickets and then it
got cancelled because of COVID. Yeah.
And you had to remember all the words again, didn't you?
We had to relearn it again, yeah.
Do you get nervous before going on stage still?
I still get nervous. I don't think it's nervous, it's apprehension, but a lot of people get nervous and it's a negative thing. I always use my nerves as a positive thing. It means I know I'm feeling right, so I should feel. Mm. If I ever went on stage and didn't feel it, I think, I don't feel right then.
Yeah.
I think you have to live on your nerves when you're out there, especially doing stand. If you're doing a play, like some others, you've got six other actors that rely on you to give them the cue line. That's a different type of discipline.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm doing stand up, you can go and do 2 hours and do whatever you want. You know, you can just talk about your tortoise for 20 minutes if you want. Whereas if you're doing a play, you can't all of a sudden diversify and start talking about your nan. No. You have to do it, say within the confines of the script. Then,
it's funny you say that because nerd comedy, I think, is a thing that you've got to get right, haven't you? The timing.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the nerves, because I've been singer of a tribute band.
Yeah.
I don't get a bit nervous for that, but my comedy, when I used to do that, it was terrible.
Oh, yeah, you live and die on your nerves when doing stand-up. But I really enjoy that. A lot of people don't like the nervousness of it, but I quite enjoy that feel. It's like going on a roller coaster. Yeah. What's going to happen when you get out there? And then also, like the bobbing and the weaving, the ducking and the dive, when you're out there going, right, that's not going as well as it should do. What are you doing? You start adapting when you're out there, which I like that about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you've sort of done many prestigious events over the last 40 years. Is there one particular one that comes to mind when you think about it?
I've done 5 Royal Variety Shows, which they were always highlights, every single one of those. And a couple of different things I've done at Buckingham Palace, which were always good, on private stuff there. But I think one of the things that really meant a lot to me was the Muppet Show. I did the 25th anniversary of the Muppet Show live in Hollywood, which was great. And I did a Royal Variety Show, and the Muppets were on it, and they had a producer and a director that just directed that segment of the show. They had the normal TV director, but then the Muppets segment was about 10, 15 minutes, so they used their own director for that in-house piece. And then I met the director and producer right then, and he said, I did his son's bar mitzvah about 6 months later. He booked me for that, yeah. And then he stayed in touch, we stayed in touch, and he phoned me up one day, and he went, are you doing anything next weekend? I was rehearsing Panto, and I went, yeah, I'm in the middle of rehearsing Panto. He went, do you think you can get away for a weekend? So I said, well, possibly, what's it for? So I said, we've got the 25th anniversary of the Muppet Show in Hollywood, and I've shown them your tapes, and they think you're a human Muppet. And they want you to come over and do 10 minutes with Gonzo and do your own stuff. So I said, you kidding? He went, no. He said, we'll fly you over. So I went, okay, then I'll ask. So I asked the director, and he went, look, of course you can go. I wouldn't stop you doing that. So they let me go, and I said, who else is on the show? They went, oh, we've got a couple of locals. thinking, I can't, didn't know who the locals were. I get out there, the locals were Brooke Shields, John Voight, and Paul Williams. Paul Williams was a lesser known actor, but a great musician. He was in all the Planet of the Apes movies, and he played all he wrote the score for the Planet of the Apes music, and he played the Lawgiver in it. And he did a great film called The Phantom of the Paradise, which a pseudo horror film in the 70s, early 70s. And he also wrote a lot of music for the Carpenters, but he did all the music for the Muppet Show. He did the Halfway Up the Stairs, Rainbow Connection. This was Paul. And at the time, I was doing Rainbow Connection in my act. I was singing Rainbow Connection from the Muppet Show in my act. I got out there, and they went, "Oh, the problem is, you've only got 2 days to learn a song." So, "What is it?" Says, "Well, it's Rainbow Connection. We're doing it at the end with everybody." So I went, "Are you kidding? I've been doing it in my act for the past year." So it just segued in. It was just brilliant to
do. Brilliant.
So is there anything on TV that you haven't done that you'd like to do?
Yeah, I'd like to do Strictly. I'd love to do that. I did Dance Here
Tonight. Oh, we can put that out as our podcast, and then we can say, we told everybody, Joe wants to do Strictly.
I'd love to do Strictly. I don't want to do Big Brother. I'm not interested in that one. That one doesn't interest me. I've been asked to do it a couple of years ago, but I went, it's not fun. I just don't want to sit on my backside and do nothing. I felt that, with The Jungle, that was 20 years ago now, though. A lot of people go, it was only a few years ago. What, about 5 years ago? No, 20 years ago I did that. And I enjoyed that experience, but it was something.
Think he was going to win?
No, you don't. I'd never go into these things and think I'm going to win.
No.
I always go in for the experience. Go, what am I going to get from this? I've never been to Australia for a start. Never been to a rainforest. And then on the back of that, because I hated flying, and on the back of that, I came back and I thought, if I can jump out of airplanes, go out to do a parachute jump, and hang out of helicopters and sit in a coffin with a load of 48 rats and, submerged in water. I should be able to learn to fly. So I got a flying. I booked myself one flying lesson. I loved it. And then I got my pilot's license within 6 months. I thought, right, okay. Well, also, I didn't have any exams. I had to pass six written exams with that.
Yeah.
Plus a radio exam. And therefore, what else haven't I done? You know, I was in, at the time, sort of 20, so I was in my 40s then. I thought, what haven't I done? I've never had a fight, so I took up boxing. I thought, I've never done any running, so I started running, did the marathon. And I thought, I've not done the exams, so I did a degree with the Open University on geology and geoscience. I thought, I've never written a book, so I've got 3 books out now. I write horror stories. So, I think it was quite...
Horror stories?
Yeah. Well,
oh, wow.
Yeah, the first book is called Dead Knobs and Doomsticks. The second one is called Dead Knobs and Doomsticks 2, Tales of Lockdown, because it's during lockdown.
And don't tell me the third one.
No, it's not. Third one changed completely. It's called Of Mice and Wolf Men. I just realised that... I think I realised my own mortality. If I'm not going to be... I want to do the things I always said I wanted to do, but most of us just sit there pontificating. I thought, I'm not going to do that. So if I do want to do something now, I just go and do it.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Yeah.
So our American, I was just thinking that with you being on here, you can now tell all the American people that, because you hadn't been out there much, but with this Muppet connection, this is who you are.
That was 21 years ago, that was.
The people listening probably actually know.
Touching on the flying, I've got my pilot's license as well.
Are you still current or not?
No,
I'm not current. I haven't been current since before COVID. That was the last time I flew.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pain, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
But you flew a yak, didn't you?
No, I bought a yak.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. When I passed my test, right, I went to get a plane. I still am. I'm obsessed with flying. I love it. I love everything about flying. I love the history of it. I love the physics of it. I love the general aviation. I love the way different planes work, helicopters. And I've been really lucky. I've flown in nearly every type of, not every type, but a vast amount of military aircraft. So I've done 25 years doing CSE, Combined Service Entertainment. So, I went to Iraq. I've done 3 tours of Falklands, Cyprus, Belize, Northern Ireland, all over the world.
You didn't fly yourself, did you?
No, I didn't. Sadly, they won't let me do it.
A bit of a sitting target flying over Iraq.
We got shot at. They tried to mort us down in Iraq. Yeah,
right.
That was an experience. Yeah. So I loved it. I've been in all the Chinooks and every all the stuff we see flying around here.
Yeah.
And I got a chance to go up the Red Arrows as well.
Wicked.
I went up in the Red Arrows. It was a fantastic experience, that was. And they let me take control of it as well.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That was an amazing experience. Yeah. That was in Cyprus. Because that's where the Red Arrows train before they do all their summer sorties.
Right.
And it was just the most amazing experience. But going back to the flying itself, I think the physics of it is what blows me away. And nobody will come with me, though. They won't. People won't sit on the same settee as me. Let them come in the plane.
Well, you're meant to be accident prone, aren't you?
I am, yeah. But I've been lucky, touch wood, on the plane.
Put the two and two together. He's accident prone and he flies. Then would you do that?
No, nobody will come with me for that reason. But yeah, going back to the yak.
Yeah.
I was determined. And I wanted to fly as much as I did. You know, that period of time, I was flying all the time. And I remember once going to, I've never done the channel, never done overseas. So I went over the channel, went to Le Touquet,
yeah.
And landed in Le Touquet, went and had an omelette and chips on the beach, and then flew back again, come back home. I was flying from Rochester in Kent at the time.
Yeah.
Flew back to Rochester, I was home in time for X Factor. It was brilliant. But yeah, so my instructor said to me, he said, look, are you going to get a plane? Oh, I have every intention of getting a plane. And I was going to get, I don't know what I was getting, PA-28, which is what I learned in,
yeah.
You know, something like that.
That's what I learned in PA-28.
Yeah, I did, yeah. That's what I was going to get. And then he went, oh, you don't want to get PA-28. They're a bit boring, aren't they? So what do you suggest I get? Expecting him to come, I don't know what he was going to say, I was going to get.
Cessna or something.
Something like that, because I love a Cessna. It's like flying. Yeah. I love Cessnas, completely because they're high wing.
Because you can see everything.
That's right. But that, as you know, they're a completely different animal to fly, right?
I'm nodding here, and I don't know.
They are completely different, though, aren't they? One floats, it's just a Cessna just floats up there. Whereas you have to fly the PA-28,
you do.
But he said, what about a Yak 52?
Oh, blimey.
He says, what is it? He went, you never heard of it? No, I don't know what a Yak 52 is. It's just Russian, and it's ex-military, you know. It's like almost like a Russian Spitfire, is the only thing you can really like. But it's a huge radial engine on it, as you know, right?
Yeah.
And these, you know, with a Cessna or a PA-28, particularly a Cessna, if you have an engine failure, you always have to, as you know, you're practicing for engine failures. If all the time you go up, that's what you do permanently. Yeah. You're practicing for your engine failure. What you're going to do if you have an engine failure there? Where you're going to go? What you're looking at for that all the time? Every minute you're in the air, you're thinking, if I have engine failure, what am I going to do? That's what you're doing in the back of your mind all the time. So with a Cessna or PA-28. For every 1,000 feet up, you've got a mile roughly to drift if you're going in the wind. You've got a mile there. So if you're 5,000 feet up, you've got 5 miles roughly in going in the wind of finding somewhere to land, right? If you're in a PA-28, then you've got slightly less, right? But if you're in a Yak 52, there's no glide on that at all, right? If you have an engine failure, it's just going to drop out of the sky.
Oh, good.
You know? It is really, isn't it? Yeah, because there's no
glide.
The weight of it is sheer drop. Yeah. So I was petrified of it every single time. I never flew it on my own, Dave. Oh, Pat. Who's Dave? I never flew it on my own, Pat. Gordon was my instructor at the time. And I bought it, and I'll tell you how much it was. It was £32,000. I borrowed the money from the bank, and they let me have it because, you know, oh, he's on the telly. Yeah, you know, £32,000. Great. Pay that back. So what's it for? Plane. I went, what? I'm not sure about that. No, don't worry. It'll be fine. So, you know, I bought it. Loved it. Absolutely loved flying. But everything is in Russian.
Right.
Excuse me. Everything is in Russian. All the dials. Yeah. So you're translating everything in your mind as you're going along. Thank you. You're translating everything as you're going along in your mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, landing was completely different because normally on the PA-28 or the Cessna, I had fixed landing gear. So basically that means the wheels are down all the time. You have to bring them up or put them down. With the Yak, you have to, once you've taken off, you know, you get, you know, 500 feet, you bring the wheels up. But once again, coming into land, you have to bring them down. And there's little lights that come up that you mustn't put down until the lights are in a line. And there's so much stuff with it. Anyway, I had it for a year and I loved it, but I was so scared of flying it. I was really, really scared. Yeah, because I was never confident in it because it was so big.
Mm.
It was like learning to drive in a Mini and then going into Formula One. So anyway, I sold it a year later to a bloke from Norway who just learned to fly as well. And he had this thing, like, oh, I want to get a Yak 52. Anyway, he bought it and he flew it back to Norway. And on his maiden voyage back, as it were, maiden flight, he landed in Norway, but he forgot to put the wheels down.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he forgot to put the wheels down. So he shoved the prop through the engine, the whole engine. God. It cost it. I sold it for $3,000 more than I bought it for. I made a profit on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had to spend another $18,000 getting the engine, the propeller fixed and all of that done on it. Yeah, I felt really bad for the bloke because it is too much of a plane for a beginner to have, really. Luckily, I had Gordon with me every time I flew it. I would never... I was never confident to go on my own.
No.
This is only for people. People listen to going, I'm not interested in flying. This is boring.
You still got one, the plane?
No, I haven't flown since I got rid of it because it was just an expense that...
I don't know if you still... You said you hadn't flown, but you didn't know if you still...
No, I still haven't got the flown. I was in a consortium, as it were, a group of us. And then once COVID hit, just couldn't do it anymore. And also, I didn't work for 2 years, and most people in show business didn't.
No.
So I never renewed my medical, basically, is what it was. I miss it. I have to say, I do miss it, though.
Yeah, when I did my qualifying cross-country, I flew into Rochester. That's one.
Oh, did you?
I flew to Southend, Rochester, and then back to Earl's Cone. That's where I live.
Yeah.
And I
got lost.
Going to Southend, so I spoke to air traffic control. He said, can you see the pier? I said, yeah. He said, go right out to the end of it, turn around and come down the pier.
Yeah, that's right. It's right opposite.
And so, but I got a pass, so...
Yeah, if you land, that's it. You've got, as long as you get there, don't matter what route you take, you get there, it's done. It's
as long
a pass.
As you do it safely,
note to self, then don't go with him.
Yeah, no, don't go with me either, though.
And when I used to fly from Norwich to... from Earl's Cone to Norwich, I just follow the A14.
Yeah. You always follow the motorways. Motorways always the best route, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
So, Joe, tell us about your new tour. What are we going to expect from this?
It's called 40 Years of CAC.
Yes.
So basically, it's a load of old stuff and a load of new stuff. So it's basically some stuff, my favourite bits, and a load of new bits that I'm putting. But it's ever changing, it's ever evolving.
So what's your favourite bit that you do?
I can't tell you what it is specifically because you just don't want to tell people what it is over the radio. But it's a psychic routine with Prince Harry.
Oh,
that's the best thing I can say about it. Yeah, we leave our bodies and we
sort of do. Because isn't your son in the... Is your son in the new tour?
Oh, no, he's not in the new tour, no.
Right, okay.
No, it's me and my mate Lee Carroll's in it again.
Yeah,
but no, we leave our bodies, we have a body swap. Me and Prince Harry, he takes over my body and I take over his body.
So does Lee actually warm up for you?
Lee does a little bit as well. Lee's a comic, but we've known each other for 30 years, been mates for 30 years. So,
yeah,
he's a great bloke.
Yeah. So did you see your mate Bradley on the Midnight Game Show?
The Midnight Game. Oh, yeah, when you woke
Michael
him up.
I expected to see you come on there.
No, they asked me to. They did phone me and said, listen, do you want to come? I said, no, listen, we've been mates for 30 years. I'm not going to go into his bedroom and wake up. I know what he'll say to me. You can't be on about to put it out.
So Brian Connolly came in, didn't he?
Yeah, I know he did,
blue coat.
Yeah, so I said, no, I don't fancy waking him up at midnight. I don't fancy that one.
Would he have been happy?
Oh, no, he wouldn't have been happy. I know he wouldn't have been happy.
We could see it on the TV, what he's like. So
He didn't look as sort of as fit and sharp as he did in his bed, did he?
We had to slip a pair of boxes on.
He's a naked boy at night.
Where do you take your inspiration from, Joe? And all the old comics?
Yeah, my inspiration was I was very lucky. I grew up with people like that took me under their wing. Bob Monkhouse, Ken Dodd, those sort of people. They were my idols, and also they were my teachers. When I did New Faces in 87, Ken Dodd was on the panel.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. So, I sat there in the makeup room, and then Ken came in. And in those days, you do the act in the afternoon and they watch it, all the judges. It's exactly the same as Britain's Got Talent, but as I said, in those days, they would watch the rehearsal in the afternoon, so they knew exactly what they were going to see.
Yeah.
They'd make a few notes, and Ken came in the makeup. He went, can I give you a bit of advice, son? So, yeah, what's that? And he pulled out a bit of paper, and he'd written down my whole act that I'd done. And he went, right, when you come out, don't do that gag first. That's a strong gag. Move that to the end there. Get rid of that there. When you take the rabbit out there, put it down your trousers, shake your leg, it'll come out the bottom, you get an extra laugh there. Do this, move that man there, do that. If you do that tonight, son, you'll win. And I did it, and I won.
Yeah.
And then I got through at the final. So, and then I stayed in contact with Ken till he died. He was a mate of mine till about 30 years later.
Well, he used to sing a song at the end, Special Absent Friends.
Yeah.
And my brother wrote that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
And wow.
Ken, he was very good friends with Ken and all that. Because we did... Pot of Gold, the talent show.
I remember Pot of Gold.
With Des O'Connor, didn't
That's
we?
It, yeah.
Was you was a judge? Was you all?
No, I wasn't. No.
Because we had Sheila Ferguson, Bobby Crush.
Sheila Ferguson was in the jungle with me when I did that.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
You've got a question to ask about interviews, haven't you?
Have I?
Yeah. Magic envelope.
Oh, I know. I have. It's not about interviews or anything like that.
Oh, I like this.
I tell you what, I'll ask. This is what we spoke about. I put that envelope in front of you.
Yeah, with a question mark on it.
Yeah, with a question. And I said, don't touch it.
Yeah.
Didn't I? It was now time to hold on. What I've done, I've predicted the answer, what you're going to say, isn't it?
Have you?
Yeah.
How bad is it going to be if I don't
say... This is a load of cack, I can tell you.
How bad is it going to be if I don't come up with the answer you wrote, though? Is it going to be really bad?
He might have a little noise that he puts on his...
Okay.
You might get ready for the... what I'd normally do in our show, I do a joke of the week.
Yeah.
And it normally gets a... Wah, wah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so if I don't, I could get a bad symbol or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the question, from the start of your career to now, who's... Or what was your most favourite interview on TV that you've done? Because you've been interviewed by hundreds of people. I've looked it up. But who's your favourite of all
favorite
time?
One. The actual interview or the one that meant the most?
All right, the one that meant the most.
Oh, it's probably Parkinson then.
Open up the envelope, Joe. What did I put on there?
Des, I was going to say, the thing I was going to say, Des, but I did Des 17 times.
Did you really?
Yeah. So I would have said Des, but
it was... You on that.
Yeah, I did it Des 17, can you believe it, 17 times.
Wow.
I was the most person, did most of all on the Des O'Connor
show. Well, I think that was my favourite.
It depends on which one, it's 17 of them. Yeah, there's loads of them out there.
Before we did the show, we did look. I certainly looked at a few of the interviews and all that.
Yeah.
Because there's one on there talking about some antlers.
Oh, stabbed myself in the antlers. But I think what happened there was because I did, Des was once again one of my tutors, he was wonderful. But when I came out of the jungle, I grew up watching Parkinson as well.
Yeah.
So I got asked to do Parkinson, and when I was on it, I was on with Paul O'Grady and Rod Stewart, and I just sat there going, this was real, imposter syndrome, and then thinking, I shouldn't be here with Rod Stewart and Paul O'Grady. It was one of those greatest moments ever, thinking, this is amazing. I kept pinching myself. I'm on Parkinson talking to Parky with Rod Stewart and Paul O'Grady. It was just amazing.
You have to pinch yourself. So who is your hero then?
My hero was Bob Monkhouse. Bob. Yeah, very close with Bob over the years. And I was with him at the end as well, so yeah, we were good mates. And he was, once again, he was a mentor to me. Mm-hmm. I was doing Butlin's gigs in the late 80s, and Bob was doing it as well, and he said, you need to be on telly a lot more, I'll get you on telly. So, okay, whatever. And then he got me on the next series of Celebrity Squares, and we did three series of that. And then I got the Royal Variety Show off the back of that, with Bob putting the word in for me through the Royal Variety Charity Fund. And then I was working with Bob at the time, and he went, okay, I want you to bring all your act down next week, and I want you to show me whole act, and we're going to put this spot together for the Royal Variety Show. And he was just great, he was brilliant like that.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of generation of comics were so special.
Do you ever come across Jimmy Tarbuck?
Yeah, I know Jimmy as well. I haven't seen Jimmy for a good few years since I've seen Jimmy. But yeah, Jimmy's not well at the moment. He's not well. But, everybody's getting old, don't we?
Yeah, we're going to see him in... So you're not
meeting Apex.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I'm there in about July, I think.
Right.
I'm there, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a nice little room. That was nice. It's not a little, it's a nice big room there.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah.
I've been to see the Bay City Rollers there. And
did you?
Yeah. Well, that was the tribute that I do.
Oh, is it?
So.
You're still doing it?
No, because of my lungs, I had to stop.
Right. I bet you miss it, don't you?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, this is why we started doing this, because Pat saw me and he said, what do I fancy doing?
Right.
And I said, I don't know. And he said, do this. But going back to Jimmy Tarbuck, I go to the Water Rats.
Do you?
Because you're a Water Rat.
I was King Rat a few years ago,
That's right, yeah.
He was on the ball this year, wasn't he, Jimmy? He was on the ball, just gone.
Oh, I don't know, because I didn't go to this one. But I'd have been in Spain for 3 years doing this tribute.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Tarbuck sitting at the table, at the top table like they do. And I went that night in a red bow tie, white jacket, white shirt, black trousers.
Yeah.
And I'm standing by the edge of the table. And he said, excuse me. So I went, he said, could you tell me where the toilets are? So I said, yeah, they're just around the back there. I said, did you think I was one of the waiters? So he went, you are, aren't you? I said, no. Just because of the way I was dressed.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, he's a nice bloke, Jimmy. Is that the first time you've seen him work then?
And also, he was so nice to talk to. He was so natural.
Yeah, he is.
That's what I found.
Yeah, he's a lovely bloke, Jimmy.
Yeah, we were talking about his daughter and everything.
I saw him in the 70s at the ABC in Great Yarmouth.
Wow.
Do you remember that ABC
there? Yeah, that's not been there for a long time now, though, has it?
That had some acts in it, didn't it, in the 70s?
Yeah,
Danny LaRue I saw there.
Wow.
Cool. Wellington Pier, they all had the Windmill Theatre, all those theatres.
That's right,
yeah.
Now we're down to the Britannia.
The Royalty used to be next to cinema, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
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 Yeah, done the Royalty a few. And there was behind that was a little venue called Rosie O'Grady's.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, done that a few times.
Good times.
So the London Palladium, Joe, you played there very, I mean, we nearly got to play there as a double act, but anyway, that's another story completely, which we're going to talk about. Is it lovely behind the scenes?
It's amazing. In actual fact, I'm there on the 30th of March this year with myself, Bradley, Brian Connolly and Shane Ritchie, just the four of us.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's my ideal lineup.
Yeah, so the four of us on the 30th of March this year. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So I bet they're sold out, though.
Well, no, it hasn't even gone on sale yet, because it's only happened this weekend.
Really?
So, yeah, it goes on sale this week.
We need to know someone who's in the show, really, don't we?
Yeah,
yeah.
That won't let us in.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, we couldn't have asked for more, could we?
No.
Well, you could have asked, but you might not have got it, but who knows? Yeah, I could cook you a bit of lunch.
You've told us more than, you know, some lovely...
What was that last bit?
I'll cook you a bit of lunch. I'm good at eggs.
Martin, yeah. Cook you a bit of lunch.
I could do a bit of lunch.
Can have some lunch.
No, I don't want that. I could cook you lunch, though.
Oh, right. Okay.
I could do scrambled eggs, love.
Well, I'll do beans on toast, but I can't get the beans out of the toaster. That's the trouble.
You never lose it.
We are two of the world's worst cooks, we are.
Oh, yeah.
Good boys. Yeah.
That man there cornered Des O'Connor in a lift and asked for an autograph after a pot of gold. He pulled out of his breast pocket a CD. And gave it to him, and Des looked at it and said, "This is a pirate copy."
It's my auntie's. Where she got it from, I don't know.
That's brilliant. Thanks for coming on the show, Joe.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, lads. Thanks very much. Thanks, Martin.
Much appreciated.
Fantastic, yeah.
And we wish you all well with your tour.
Yeah, good luck on the tour.
Which I believe is called Not... Oh, or the new normal.
And the new normal, 40 years of cack.
40 years of cack.
Yeah, because nothing's normal. What's normal? Normality is a state of mind exclusive to the innate perception of the individual.
I'm glad
there you
said
go,
that.
Yeah.
That's easy awesome for you, son. Yeah. Brilliant, Joe. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Take care.
Thank
a lot.
Thank you.
A huge, huge thank you to Joe Pasquale there. I think you'll agree, what a wonderful guest. And our first celebrity guest on Who's Tom and Dick. Make sure you get out and see his show, 40 Years of Cack, at all good theatres around the UK. We'll be back next Friday. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend and goodbye.